Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Well, this is America This Week, and we're talking about the news and the views in America Magazine, which you can find at americamagazine.org/Sirius. I'm Father Matt Malone. I'm joined by Ashley McKinless, who's on the staff of America, and by a winded Father Sam Sawyer, who has just jogged across Manhattan to get to the studio. We had a really interesting piece in America this week, which was the cover. Well, it's on the cover. It's not the cover story. A piece by Stephanie Slade, who is at Reason Magazine and is a contributing writer to America. She's also a libertarian and a devout Catholic, pro-life. And this piece was her her effort to reconcile her view of Catholic social teaching as a Catholic and her view of libertarianism as a libertarian, two things which seem to most people to be in quite a tension. You know, I liked the piece. I thought it was well argued, didn't necessarily agree with it. But it's caused quite a stir. So we thought we'd have her on to talk about it. Stephanie, it's great to have you on America This Week.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So let me ask you first, what is the thesis of your piece, and why did you decide to write it?
Yeah, I think the thesis, I guess as I was doing research for this piece, I was struck by how much suspicion and skepticism there is on both sides, both Catholics looking over at libertarians and libertarians looking at Catholics and Catholic social teaching on the common good in particular. And there's a lot of skepticism on both sides. But as I actually did my research, I thought it was amazing how unnecessary a lot of that skepticism really is, because what was interesting to me was when you actually look at the vocabulary of the words common good or libertarianism or individual rights, but actually the messages and the values underneath there, they're very, very similar. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you talk to a libertarian about what we believe and why we believe it, you'll hear people say things like, I believe that people should be treated as ends, not means. And they say things like, I believe that freedom and free markets create the conditions for human flourishing. Mm-hmm. And then when you go and you look at what does the Catholic Church say about the common good and what is in the Catechism, the language is very similar. It's the sum total of social conditions which allow people to reach their fulfillment. It's you know, people have inherent dignity. It's society should serve the individual, not the other way around. It's very, very similar, in fact.
Right, but I'm sure you would also say that they're not identical, right? There probably is some tension between them. And what would be the tension that you would identify?
Well, it's not even so much that I would call it tension. I would say that these are two sort of philosophical traditions that are trying to do two different things. Libertarianism, for me, and for many libertarians, though not all libertarians, is a philosophy of government. It is a sort of way of thinking about the proper role of the state, and the state being this unique institution because it has the right to use violence against people to keep them in line, that therefore it should be constrained and that we should think very carefully about what is the proper role for that institution. Libertarianism for me doesn't tell you how to live your life, what other civil society institutions, mediating institutions, churches, charities, neighborhood groups, how should families operate, how should individuals live a moral life. It doesn't do any of that because it's a philosophy of government, whereas obviously Catholic social teaching is a very different animal.
In your piece, you defend libertarianism both in theory, because you think its tenets are real, but also just based on observation about what free markets have done to improve the conditions of people around the world. Can you make that case for our listeners? And then I might have some questions about it.
Sure. So, I mean, the sort of high-level case, and this is, of course, similar to the case that Arthur Brooks made in the pages of America last year that's gotten some attention, is just the idea that capitalism, the free flow of people, the free flow of goods and services, sort of free voluntary exchange between people, is the best way to order our sort of commercial interactions and the sort of driving, it's the best sort of driving philosophical force behind the way government should think about its role as far as interfering in the economy, because it leads to prosperity, because it leads to the kind of miracle that we are all living through right now, though we sometimes don't think about it, which is, you know, billions of people, hundreds of millions or even more than a billion people being lifted out of extreme poverty around the world all the time. We in this country are very fortunate. We have all kinds of, we have access to food and medicine and communications technologies and all this amazing stuff. And at the same time, the poorest people on the planet are also getting better off over time.
Yeah, and so I guess my question with that is, what would you say to people that, you know, there's a difference between capitalism and markets, which, you know, are tools that have, I would agree, that have lifted people out of poverty, and libertarianism, which I don't know if it has ever really been tried. Like, the people who are lifted out of poverty in places like China and India, there was significant state intervention in that process. So would you say that libertarianism has ever been tried in reality? And
no, I mean, okay, certainly not. It's not like there's a particular country that I would point to say, like, that's you know, the country that's an example of this. It's more about the direction that we should be pushing our governmental institutions in. Should we be wanting government to be bigger and more involved in the economy and in our personal lives as well? Or should we want it to sort of be the night watchman? Should we want it to be considered the last resort, where if things go really wrong, it's there and ready to step in, but we should try every other option at our disposal and see if we can use voluntary, you know, institutions before we resort to passing a law.
Stephanie, I'm wondering, one of the examples I was struck with in your piece, because it's it was for me the place where I hadn't yet thought about how a libertarian would view this issue and what a libertarian philosophy of government would bring to it. But you gave the example in your piece about being struck, almost gut punched, both as a Catholic and a libertarian, by the family separation policy that was going on at the southern border. And yeah, so I think, you know, most of our listeners and certainly any reader of America is going to be very familiar with why the church and why, you know, most people have recoiled from the family separation policy when it comes to, the Catholic case for welcoming the stranger, et cetera. Could you talk us through a little bit how that compares to the libertarian way in which you were struck by how terrible and tragic this policy was?
Sure. And it's once again, it's remarkably similar. As a libertarian, I believe in the free flow of goods and people. I think that people should be free to the greatest practical, you know, extent possible. So I don't believe in putting up barriers. And that goes for, you know, tariffs, and it goes for all kind of, you know, zoning restrictions here in D.C. that make my rent so much more expensive than I wish it was. And it also goes for whether people can start a new life, can flee, I know, a terrible situation, in some cases a war-torn country, or a place where they just feel like they cannot do what's right for their children, and start a new life somewhere else. And I don't think that we should be throwing up barriers to that. And that's for both pragmatic reasons, sort of, I think that in terms of economic efficiency, I want the workers to come where we have a need for them, right? But also at a sort of more philosophical level, it's just, I think many, if not most, libertarians would agree with me, it's just wrong to sort of control people in that way. That's sort of a fundamental tenet of what we're all about, is not arbitrarily controlling the way people live their lives in ways that cause them harm. Mm.
You know, when I was reading this piece, Stephanie, I thought to myself, there is an echo here of John Courtney Murray. I mean, he made a case in, he was not a libertarian, but by any stretch of the imagination. I think he was, I don't know what he was, but but he was a political philosopher, a Jesuit, mid-20th century Jesuit political philosopher and an American. And he argued that, civil society was by and large these intermediary associations between government and people. Right, that much of our culture and our civilization was in this space between government and us. You know, everything from bowling leagues to churches to synagogues and so forth. And, you know, the critique that comes to Murray these days from folks like William T. Kavanaugh is that that may have been true in Murray's time. It's not really true today because those intermediate associations have really atrophied or completely disappeared. If that is the case, what does that mean for a libertarian viewpoint?
Well, I wouldn't want to overstate the case. I mean, there are still a million and one ways that we all interact with each other that don't involve, you know, like casting a ballot once every 2 or 4 years or even writing a letter to our congressperson. I mean, we are all engaging with each other all the time in ways that don't involve the government directly, whether it's the PTA meeting or whatever it is. I mean, at the same time, I don't want to deny that there may be some atrophying happening. Church attendance is down. That's troubling. Of course it is. But I guess when we talk about, okay, there's a problem, you know, we can agree that there is a problem here that probably requires or warrants something. The question then is, okay, but what is the right way to go about trying to solve that? And should we immediately turn to the state? Or should we say, well, okay, these institutions are atrophying. What can I do about it? How can I become more involved in my community? How can the church... What can the church learn? What lessons can the church learn about how it can do a better job of being that sort of that civil society layer that gives us many, many ways to interact with each other, short of, for example, you know, calling in the criminal justice system, which we want to put a lot of distance between people and government, because so often for so many people, and especially for the sort of the sort of least among us, the people who are disadvantaged to begin with, their interactions with government are not often very, you know, they're not very happy. They're afraid of cops, right? Their trust levels in the federal government or even the state and local government are pretty low, and so we want to not force people to think of government as the only way that we can interact with each other. Are there other ways we can solve this problem? The markets can actually provide some of those alternatives, whether it's social media or whether it's the cafe or the corner bar or whatever. There are a lot of ways that we can, if we sort of broaden our sense that government is the name of the things we do together, and, you know, realize that there are lots of ways to do things together, and maybe we should be a little less in a rush to turn to the state, that could lead to better outcomes in a lot of levels.
So Catholic social teaching, it puts forward like these two ideas: subsidiarity, the idea that when there is a problem, it should be solved at the lowest level possible, libertarianism, it seems like it's strong on subsidiarity. But the other value is solidarity. So where does that play into this philosophy? Like, why does a libertarian think that they should be concerned about the plight of someone else and act to alleviate suffering, suffering of others in their community?
Yeah, I make the point of the piece that it's actually quite interesting to me. You know, most of the libertarians I know are not, they're certainly not practicing Catholics. Most of them very often, they're not people of faith at all. And yet they take very seriously the idea of, you know, the human person being imbued with an inherent dignity and being, deserving of respect. I think it's so interesting because I don't know that a lot of them could even answer the question of why that is. But they believe it's true, right? They intuitively know that is a thing that they believe, and they actually are trying to build an entire sort of philosophy of governance on that foundation. So even though when you say, well, you know, why is the person worthy of respect? Is it because, you know, I would say it's because we're made in God's image. Most libertarians wouldn't say that, and yet I make this point. It's striking when you listen to the sort of rhetoric and the language and if you read libertarian thinkers, how strongly that comes out.
Yeah, I do think there is a stereotype that, you know, libertarians, you know, don't care about poverty or, you know, issues like that, because, you know, the market decides what the market decides. But you point out in your piece, you open the piece with a scene from this Students for Liberty conference where they're cheering the decline in extreme poverty around the world. So I did find that an interesting aspect of the philosophy.
Yeah, it's. I think it's just an idea that there are. In fact, there's much more solidarity at play when people are making choices for themselves and when people are starting groups to try to solve problems at a local level than when they're just saying, "Well, I pay taxes; somebody else will take care of that problem."
So, Stephanie, on that note of paying taxes, I think certainly one of the impressions I have of libertarianism, and I will say it's an impression that is that I'm realizing is probably a bit of a caricature, especially after reading your piece. But certainly the way that libertarianism functions within American politics is it seems to frequently be advocating for a fairly absolute form of property rights and usually advocating for negative liberties, right? So the freedom to be free from government interference and government regulation and et cetera. And I think one of the places it seems to me that this comes into pretty significant tension with how I understand Catholic social teaching is that Catholic social teaching would treat property rights as downstream from human dignity, right? So private property as a good and necessary thing, but good and necessary in order to achieve the larger aim of human flourishing, and not sort of sacred in its own right. I mean, in fact, Catholic social teaching will talk about the universal destination of goods, the idea that what is given to the human race materially is in a very basic sense meant to be shared. Which, and from there, the line to some level of government redistribution seems pretty obvious. So I'm wondering how you sort of parse that out in your view of libertarianism. How absolute should property rights be? And what do we do in cases where the distribution of property that we have inherited is profoundly unjust?
I think that actually one of the most interesting things about writing this piece for me was going back and reading through the papal encyclicals, so especially Rerum Novarum, this famous social encyclical from like 130 years ago, where in that encyclical and in several of the others that I read, there is an interesting point that's made, which is that Pope Leo wrote that property rights are important, that they must be respected, that the sort of system must respect and protect them. But that doesn't mean, and that shouldn't be taken to mean, that you have the right, a sort of moral right, to do whatever you want with your stuff. You have a moral, we have moral obligations to each other. But he says essentially, but yet it's very, very important that our governmental system, that our society respects our rights to our stuff. Even if we have moral obligations beyond just the simple, like, that's mine, that's yours. And I think that's interesting, that's important, and that perfectly fits in with what libertarians believe, which is, again, we can still have moral obligations to each other. We can still have, and I believe we do, and I think most libertarians believe we do, although we may disagree on exactly what those obligations are. But the fact that we think that the system should be very sort of robust and committed to protecting property rights it's a different thing to say this is what the law should do and this is what individuals should do, within the framework of that law.
So if I can push on that just a little bit more, because I take quite seriously, both from your piece and from the piece we published a little ways back from Arthur Brooks, that that the church in its commitment to responding to poverty should pay much greater attention to the fact that the most empirically effective way that we've addressed poverty is through significant global development, which obviously also has negative effects in other ways and in other places. But I guess, so the question I would ask you though is, so let's take good note of the positive effects of development through market forces. But if it's not going to, significant moral inequities in the common use of stuff, if that is the case, and that's a real moral problem, and libertarianism says, well, that may be a moral problem, but it's not a moral problem we should address with the law or with the power of the state, what is the right way to address it? And do you think that contemporary libertarians are doing enough to address it?
I think the answer is cultural change. It has to be cultural change. It has to be changing hearts and minds. And I certainly would not defend everything that every libertarian believes on this front, right? Many libertarians are pro-choice on the abortion question, for example, and I'm pro-life. So we disagree about many aspects of what is moral, what is right, what is the good. But I do think that what we want is a world where people, again, like, if we're talking about solidarity, for example, or I like the word caritas, you know, love in that sense that we hear about in the Bible. I don't think that's a thing that can be legislated, and I think that it's actually quite dangerous to try. What we want is a world where people care about each other, where we voluntarily look out for each other. Again, in Rerum Novarum, Pope Leo says that almsgiving is a duty not of justice, but of Christian charity. He says explicitly, it is a duty not enforced by human law. And so it's totally fine and good to be looking to solve these problems and to be trying to persuade each other that we should care more about these problems. And I think libertarians probably could think more and talk more about that side of it, the sort of cultural change side of it. But again, I feel like I really have to harp on the fact that, to me, we don't want to ask libertarianism as a philosophy to do too much. It is a theory of government. It is, you know, a way of thinking about the proper role of the state, and it leaves lots of room and goes out of its way to carve out and protect lots of room for people to debate and discuss and try to persuade each other and live out their values without interference from the state, which is why, of course, you know, Reason Magazine and the Cato Institute all came down on the side of religious freedom when it comes to the Little Sisters of the Poor, for example, or whether somebody should have to bake a cake if they don't want to. Even though libertarians might not agree with that baker or might not agree with the church's teaching on birth control, for example, they're gonna come down hard on the side of the right for these institutions to live out their faith and live out their convictions because that's what the philosophy tells them is right. It doesn't tell them, you know, it's not trying to tell them what the individual institutions should do or believe. It's just telling them, you know, should they have the right to act on whatever those things are.
The piece is called A Libertarian Case for the Common Good. It can be found at americamagazine.org/serious. Stephanie Slade, thank you. Thank you for your contributions to America.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel. You can find it all at americamagazine.org/serious. And to subscribe, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. Thanks for listening, and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.